Welcome to the Space Show, Simon.
Thank you, Andrew.
What's a pulsar?
Well, a pulsar is a very small and very dense star. And they're formed when a very big star, something like 10 times as heavy as our Sun, when they end their lives, they explode in a very violent explosion known as a supernova explosion. And what gets left over after the explosion is this very small lump of matter. It's only 10 kilometers across, and it's very heavy. It still weighs 1.5 times as much as the Sun. And it rotates quite fast. And every time it rotates, it emits a beam of radio waves in our direction. So you can think of it as it's like a lighthouse in space. And you know that when you look at a lighthouse, every time it goes round, you see the flash of light. For pulsars, it's exactly the same. Every time it rotates, you get this flash of radio waves in our direction.
That means that the pulsar is not emitting light in all directions or radio signals in all directions. It must be emitting them in a particular direction. Is that right?
That's right. It's got quite a small beam of radiation. It only emits over about 20% of its period. And so if you might be unlucky and it might not just beam in our direction, in which case we've no chance of ever detecting it.
A bit like being above the lighthouse and you just don't see the beam.
Yes, that's right.
Well, why is it in the beam? What makes it? What makes the beam of light or radio
well, it's
signal?
It's essentially because it's got a very strong magnetic field. And you know on the Earth, there's a North Pole and a South Pole magnetic field on the Earth, and it's the same with these pulsars. Except on pulsars, the magnetic field is very, very strong. It's about 1 trillion times what it is on Earth. And the radiation is forced to come out of the magnetic poles. So if you like, the beam is formed by the magnetic pole.
Okay, and you've been doing some studies into this. What have you been doing?
Well, what we've been doing is we've been using the Parkes Radio Telescope in New South Wales to search for these pulsars. And Parkes is the biggest telescope in the Southern Hemisphere, and it's ideally equipped to make these searches. And we only know, before we started this search, we only knew of 7 millisecond pulsars, which are a special type of pulsars that rotate very, very fast, 1,000 times a second. And there was only 6 of these known, and they'd all been discovered in the Northern Hemisphere. So we thought we'd start a search in the Southern Hemisphere and try and find a lot more of these things, because they're very interesting objects astronomically. So we started this search 2 years ago in May 1991, and the search is almost finished, and we've discovered 10 of these millisecond pulsars to date. So we've more than doubled the number that's known.
So what's so special about a millisecond pulsar as against some other ones?
Well, millisecond pulsars have had a different lifestyle than your normal pulsars. And that's because they nearly all tend to have companion stars in orbit around them. Now, we know many stars have binary companions, but it seems as most pulsars are single pulsars, and that's because in the big explosion that creates the pulsar in the first place, if it did have a binary companion, its companion gets lost in the explosion. A few of these pulsars are lucky enough to keep hold of their companion, and then what happens is, as the companion gets bigger and bigger, as it gets older, matter from the companion falls onto the pulsar, and it causes the pulsar to spin faster and faster and faster. And you can think of that as a little bit like an ice skater. You know, you've seen ice skaters do pirouettes with their arms outstretched, and as they pull their arms in, they start to spin faster and faster. And exactly the same thing happens with these pulsars. And they get spun up to incredible speeds, up to these speeds of 1,000 times per second. And so they nearly all have these binary companions. Now, it's very interesting to study them for a number of reasons. One is this evolution that I've sketched out for you is just one example of a theory of how they're formed. And the more you find of them, the better off you are understanding where they've come from and where they're going to go to, the future and the past of the history. But the other very interesting thing about these pulsars is that they make extremely good clocks. And they're very, very stable. They're stable to one part in 1,000,000,000,000,000. And so that means that if you were to wear one on your wrist, it would only lose 1 second every 100 billion years. So it's the most accurate clock known.
But that went on. The universe itself is only about 15 billion years.
Yes, well, that's right. So you'd have to wait a very, very long time before you lost a second. And what we're hoping to do, at present, the standard of a second is given by the vibrations of a cesium atom. And they're kept in confined conditions and clocks here on Earth. And there's one, for example, in Washington, D.C., and they have this clock, and they tell the rest of the world what time it is. Now, those clocks are very, very accurate, but they're not quite as accurate as these millisecond pulsars. So what we're hoping to do is, if we detect enough of them all around the sky, we can then get our time directly from the millisecond pulsars, and that will be the future time standard for all high-precision experiments.
So a timekeeping observatory, instead of perhaps in the old days, of course, they used to watch the transit of the sun at midday, didn't they?
That's right, yes.
And then they switched over to pendulum clocks and then atomic clocks.
Right.
So perhaps they'll be adding a little radio telescope dish to their observatory and keeping it from the pulsar.
Yes, well, that's the thing we hope to do, and we hope in Australia to become at the forefront of this, because obviously a lot of these pulsars are going to be in the southern hemisphere. We've just found 10 of them, and they can only be observed from Australia. And so we're hoping to do quite a lot of work in this in the near future.
So Australia could well be in the forefront of the world's timekeeping system in the future.
Yes, well, that's the plan, yes.
Well, why do we need to keep time so accurately?
Well, there's lots of experiments that you need to know the time very well for. For example, in particle physics and for the decay of radioactive atoms and so on. And for doing experiments like at CERN, the nuclear physics experiments, you need very, very accurate time. Also, the thing that you also need time for is these positioning satellites that we have now above the Earth that can tell your position very, very accurately. Now, they also need to know the time very accurately. And the more accurately they know the time, the more accurately you can pinpoint your position on Earth. And that's really the future. In 10 years or so, or 20 years maybe, most people will be carrying these around with them, and they'll be able to, for example, drive through cities by using these satellites and so on.
Yeah, that's the Navistar Global Positioning System. They actually have atomic clocks on board each satellite, don't they?
Yes, that's right. And they also check the time with the Naval Research Lab in Washington, D.C., and they distribute the time all around the Earth. Now, it's feasible, and we're talking quite a bit into the future here, that they might, instead of having atomic clocks on board, they might have little radio telescopes which monitor these pulsars, and they can get the time directly from them.
Well, who would have thought that studying the pulsars would have given us a more accurate look at time? Thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show, Simon.
Thank you very much, Andrew.